Welcome to Gold Soul, where empowered parenthood and conscious living meet. I'm Jessie, a licensed home birth midwife, here to explore birth, parenting, and personal growth. Through real stories, reflections, and chats with holistic experts, we'll uncover fresh insights, heartfelt support, and a bit of humor. Let's laugh, learn, and grow together through the beauty and challenges life brings.
Good afternoon. I'm so excited. Today we have the amazing Ashley Shapiro joining us. Ashley is a postpartum mother baby nurse that works bedside in hospital, but she also has a community-based lactation business as an IBCLC. So thank you so much for joining us today. Ashley, as we get started, will you talk to us a little bit about what brought you to becoming a nurse and then why you decided to further that with an IBCLC certification?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I just love spending time with you and chatting, so I know today is going to be so much fun. But actually how I got started over a decade now, and I'm aging myself, I won't say how long I've been a nurse for, but over a decade now, I actually got into nursing. My grandma had like a botched hysterectomy. She ended up being paralyzed from the waist down. And so as like a young kid, I only knew her in a wheelchair. And so I always wanted to help her. I always wanted to be like her right-hand person if she needed anything. That's really what drove me to become a nurse. And so that experience with my grandma and like caretaking, I think it just kind of came naturally for me. And so seeing her obviously like in and out of the hospital and stuff, I was like, that's what I want to do. And so that's kind of like what sparked me becoming a nurse at such a young age. I knew that that's what my passion was. And then fast forward a few years later, having kids, breastfeeding, which, oh my gosh, we're going to dive into that. But it was such a struggle for me. And so I actually had a lactation consultant. It wasn't the best experience. The way she made me feel, I was like, there's got to be another way. Like, I do not want someone to ever feel that way, especially the way she made me feel. And so that's kind of like what got my wheels spinning. And then obviously I ended up being successful with breastfeeding because of the help of another IBCLC. And so I think that like, yes, negative experience, but like such a beautiful thing to happen, because I think if my daughter and I didn't have that experience together, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. So
that's amazing. So one of the things that I find the most amazing about you, because we're so blessed to live in an area with an abundance of resources in the lactation and perinatal world, but you currently juggle both working in hospital as well as having a community private practice for lactation support. And that's so unique because you could obviously work in hospital doing your lactation support there. So what was the draw to working with the community on the ground, and how do you juggle those two worlds?
Yeah, so it's a lot. It's a lot. But I think why I went to private practice is there was such a need. So what you get in the hospital is so different than what you get out in the real world. In the hospital, you know, they're really sleepy. Their whole world just got flipped upside down. What's really cool about my role there is I actually don't do any lactation there. I just do mother baby. And then on labor and delivery, I get to be like the baby nurse. So if they need help with like breathing or whatever it may be after they're born, that's kind of what I get to do. And obviously I don't get that in outpatient lactation. It's just such a rewarding place to be. And like knowing that I can help, I don't think it's so hard for me to leave. Like, I don't think I could ever leave that. You're bringing babies into the world, and you know, like it's the most incredible feeling in the world. Like you get to help these families on this journey. But it's just different. You know, this is like my baby outpatient. Obviously, I see a lot of different ranges of babies. Usually by the time they come in to see me, they're a little bit more awake and active and wanting to breastfeed. But yeah, it's a lot. I have two little kids. And so juggling like their schedules and school and work and all the things. But it's something that like really fuels my soul. And I think if I didn't have that like passion for it, and you know, like moms tell me like, you've been such a great help. Like just that feedback of like, okay, I am here and this is my purpose. Like that's what kind of keeps me going. And I just make it work.
That's amazing. So what's the most common issue you find families complaining about in regards to breastfeeding, and how do you support that?
So biggest thing would be like painful latch. Usually, well, there's usually two: low milk supply and painful latch. Those are like the top reasons, really. But it kind of depends on like what's going on. So if it's something like the baby's just not latching well, so they're not pulling the milk out, then they're, the supply dips. If it's something like they have a medical history and that's kind of like what the reason is, right? That's causing that low supply. We kind of have to like play like, I don't know, mystery game and figure out what's causing it. So depending on what the situation may be, if it's like a low supply thing, let's check the latch, make sure the baby's transferring. If not, what's causing the baby not transfer? Is it a tongue tie? Is it, they have a low tone, they're not sucking well. The birth also plays like a pretty good factor in how they breastfeed, depending on how they came out too. So just really trying to figure out like what the issue is and then how we can support the family moving forward.
So, what does like a typical visit with you look like?
So typically they come in, we'll weigh the baby. At that first little weigh, I look and check the mouth. I see like, is there a tongue tie? Is there a lip tie? As an IBCLC, I can't technically like diagnose, but as an RN, I can be like, this is my assessment. This is who I would recommend you go see and get an evaluation. So that's kind of cool that I have that, license as far as assessment. And then talking about my history and like knowing how to do a newborn assessment really carries over into lactation. So that whole hospital setting really helps me out in here too. But they'll come in, we'll weigh the baby, look in the mouth, and then we'll go over to the couch and then we'll have them actually latch the baby. So I get to see like what their positioning looks like. Are they using pillows? How is the mom sitting? And then it kind of just takes off from there. And we kind of like see what the problem is. And then we'll weigh the baby again to see if the baby's like drank anything. If not, how to troubleshoot that. And then coming up with a plan of care.
That's awesome. So, how many visits do people usually spend with you?
So that varies depending on the mom. Typically, it's anywhere from like 1 to 3 or 4. My favorite appointment, though, is a prenatal. So I usually have them come in around 37 weeks pregnant before they even have the baby. We talk about basics, how to latch your baby, what's normal, what's not. I can't tell you how many times moms come in and they're like, oh, my friend said breastfeeding was supposed to like hurt and that's normal. I'm like, no, where did they get this information? Not normal. Breastfeeding should not hurt. So it's just fun. You get to like really open up this whole new world for them. And then at the end of the appointment, we do like hand expression and I teach them how to physically do it on themselves. And that's the best part of lactation. Like that's when it comes full circle. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm having a baby. There's milk coming out of my boobs. Like, what is happening? So prenatal, yeah, there's like one there, and then typically 2 or 3 after. It just depends, right? If it's a baby that has like a tongue tie, they're gonna need a little bit closer follow-up, so we'll use a few more appointments. What's cool about like PPO insurance plans, almost everybody has lactation coverage, so those visits are essentially free. So that's really nice.
That's amazing. I think so many people aren't aware that that's an option. And I think the prenatal option, I don't think I even realized that that's something you offer too. I know that I always am telling people take a breastfeeding class. While breastfeeding is this physiological process, it can be a lot harder than you anticipate, you know? And in my opinion, we don't live in this culture that strongly supports breastfeeding. We want to say that it does, but I feel like there's still so many stigmas around it. We're not really set up to truly support that mother-baby dyad in that breastfeeding relationship. And I think being able to be informed with proper expectations as well as know-hows prenatally absolutely can set people up for success. And I didn't even realize that that visit with you was an option because I'm always like, oh, well, take a breastfeeding class, read these books, look at these videos, right? But to have that person there from the beginning, like that is beautiful. And the fact that you teach them hand expression, like I feel like as a mom for myself, hand expression was like the hardest part to really understand. Okay, wait, how am I holding it? How much pressure? How do I, what do they mean? Pull back and roll, you know? So I think that is amazing being able to have you right next to them doing that. So then, do you also talk about colostrum harvesting?
I do. Yeah. So that, like I said, I think prenatals are my favorite because it just opens up like the door for, oh my gosh, I can do this. My body can do this. The best is like when the dads come to the appointments too and they're like, she just did what? And they're like shocked that the breast can even produce that kind of milk. I was like, yeah, guys, she's been making milk since she was like 16 weeks pregnant. Of course her body can do this. But yeah, so we do it in the appointment. I have them bring like little colostrum collectors to like actually collect it. Everything in the appointment. So like how I'm different from like a hospital class, for example, is it's specific to them. So they would fill out my little intake form. I know like what medical history they have going on, any like previous miscarriages, anything that right could affect going forward. And then the actual hands-on hand expression, which is my favorite part. But you can't do that in a hospital class, a room full of 30 people. That would be awkward.
A little bit.
So it's fun. Yeah, they come in, we collect that milk, and then I would expect they keep continuing that. The biggest thing is I want them to feel like they can utilize themselves for support. Like I want them to be empowered to be like, oh, my baby has low blood sugar. Okay, I'm gonna hand express, give me 5 minutes and I'll be right back. Because I know I see it in the hospital. Everyone freaks out if they have jaundice, severe weight loss, low blood sugar. It's like, do we even give them a chance? They only need about 5 to 7 mLs in that first day of life, and we're shoving like a 2 ounce bottle down their throat. I mean, we don't personally, but I know that there's situations out there where that happens. But it's like they know how to hand express because they came to that prenatal class or appointment, and then they know how to physically remove the milk themselves and then supplement their baby. So I think that's the coolest thing is being like, your body can do this with the right tools. A lot of times I'll have moms, they come in and they're like, yeah, I just like squeezed my nipple and nothing came out. And I was like, well, yeah, there's like a technique to doing it. So teaching them how to do that is so empowering. And I like I said, it's one of my favorite appointments.
I love it. You just like blew my mind that that was an option. So, for those that are listening and aren't familiar with collecting colostrum prenatally, what that looks like, what does that mean? Can you talk a little bit on how you educate around that?
Yeah, and this is great because I can now tap into your brain. So a lot of times the OBs are very afraid of colostrum harvesting. You say like, "Can I start collecting colostrum?" And they're like, "No, you're going into labor." But like reality, and maybe you want to take over this little chunk, and then I'll come back to it. But reality is.
Yeah, unless your body's ready, it's not going to intervene with that process. So nipple stimulation, I feel is when we're utilizing that as a tool to get things started, it's a little different than from what I understand colostrum harvesting to be. We're also not encouraging either of those where it would be too early in the game for, baby to be born safely. But nipple stimulation on its own, the way we go about it, we're talking about the hormonal release and we're talking about, okay, we're getting close to wanting baby to be born. Let's get that ball rolling. It doesn't, when it comes to colostrum harvesting and nipple stimulation in general, from what I understand, I think there was a study that was done in Australia recently, and they weren't seeing too big of a connection between colostrum harvesting and premature onset of labor. And the benefits of colostrum harvesting long term were way greater than the risk of those moms potentially putting themselves into labor. So, as a midwife, that's not a concern of mine really ever, unless we have certain histories that we're aware of. And there's been, some red flags in pregnancy that I wouldn't suggest doing it, prior to around 38 weeks. But in general, it's not something I advise my clients to steer away from because it's so beneficial long term.
Well, thank you for that clarification. Glad everybody now knows. Approved by Jesse.
Right.
But yeah, so that's another thing, right? So that we do normally at 37 weeks or anytime after, because technically their term at 37 weeks. What I recommend is like 1 to 3 times a day for 5 to 10 minutes. We're not doing it crazy 20 times a day. It's going to put you into labor. I know that's always the OB's fear, but realistically, it's not going to happen. If your body is ready, sure, it'll happen. But why I like them to start doing that is one, especially if it's their first baby, they probably don't touch their boobs a lot. They're like, okay, my body's changing. Now my boobs are changing. Now milk's coming out. Like, what the heck? But my goal for them is that they feel comfortable enough to touch their breast, how to do the right positioning. That way, when the baby comes, they know how to like get themselves in perfect position for breastfeeding. Why I like doing it, obviously, after 37 weeks is because it does prepare you. If the baby's jaundice, has low blood sugar, severe weight loss, you're supplementing with your own milk. Obviously, like donor milk, formula, it's there for a reason. It's not a bad thing. Like, absolutely. I would never be like, don't feed your baby. But if you can use your own milk to provide, that's not going to mess with your supply. It's going to be specific to your baby. You're giving all of those vitamins, nutrients, stem cells, everything that the colostrum has to offer for your baby. So I'm really big on that, obviously, if you can't tell.
Yeah, I think it's such an amazing tool that we can prepare for. I've seen it come into play when we've had a baby. So I had a birth recently, and that baby had such a hard time latching. Mom had inverted nipples. It was the middle of the night. There was no CVS or Target open for nipple shields, and we could not get this kiddo to latch. And thankfully, she had some colostrum in the freezer. And, you know, as a midwife, we want to see that that baby can latch and have a decent feed prior to discharge. In the rare situation where I have a mom who's, you know, successfully breastfed in the past, I feel a little bit more comfortable being, okay, well, you know, let me know when the baby does latch. But this was a first-time mom, and so I really wanted to see this baby have a good feed. My other concern is, well, I know the baby's born full, right, because they are hooked up until the time that baby and placenta is born. I really just wanted to make sure that their blood sugars were going to be stable and, you know, being able to witness that myself. So she had some colostrum in the freezer. We were able to feed that baby until we could get some nipple shields on hand, you know, the next morning and get that baby latched at that time. But being able to have that as a tool can be so helpful and peace of mind for families, because I feel like so many times you get nervous if the baby's not latching, if the baby's now super sleepy for whatever reason. And it can get, we can fall victim to those subconscious messages of, oh, I need a supplement. I need to, let's just give the baby formula, right? And then that vicious cycle starts. And I agree with what you said. I think that formula and donor milk, those are tools, they're medicines, and there is a time and place. But even in our world as community-based providers, as a home birth midwife, that obviously I have a pretty high breastfeeding success rate amongst my practice, there's still this like subconscious messaging with even so many of my clients who fully, wholeheartedly believe in their body's abilities and the physiological process of birth and breastfeeding, that that programming is still there of, oh, well, just in case, I should have formula just in case, right? So for many reasons, I'm also a huge fan of having that colostrum on hand, because you never know when you're going to, you know, benefit from having it.
Yeah. And I think our day and age too, everything's so plugged in with like social media. Everybody wants to share their like negative stories, but no one wants to be like, hey, I breastfed for 2 years. It was awesome. Like, you know, you can have an okay journey and still talk about it. And I think that's the hardest part of social media, is like, it could go so many ways. The biggest one, the example I always give is like the overproducers, the moms that have like tons and tons and tons of milk, and they post it and they're like, look at all my milk I've stored. And I get clients send me this and they're like, is this real? I'm like, she probably has oversupply. Like, don't compare yourself. And I think that's the hardest part of like our day and age, is like, we're so dialed into like everybody's personal information, including their breast milk. It's just, it's a lot.
Absolutely. So let's talk on that a little bit. So in those situations when pumping is recommended or hand expression is recommended and moms are yielding that output and they come to you and they say, Ashley, I only got half an ounce after I hand expressed or pumped, after feeding the baby, I only got 1 ounce. My supply's low. How do you respond to that?
That's such a good question. It truly depends on what's going on. Obviously, if an example I always use too is like, if you feed your baby, the baby is taking that milk. You're not supposed to have all this extra milk, especially by the time your body regulates. Your body's learning, do we have one baby or do we have three? Once it learns you only have one, it's not going to produce for three unless you have like an oversupply. Typical pumping should be anywhere from like 2 to 4 ounces in place of a feed. If they're pumping like immediately after or shortly after, half an ounce to an ounce is actually normal.
That's awesome. And in regards to supporting a soon-to-be breastfeeding mom or a mom who is in that breastfeeding journey, what is the number one thing that you would recommend her partner, her family to do to help support her physically and emotionally as she's in that journey?
There's so many things. I think, like, obviously breastfeeding is a huge chunk, right? Like, you have the baby after the birth, then what? You're basically feeding all day long. I think being there, supporting her, like, even if you're not, you're just present and like encouraging her, telling her she's doing a good job, that goes so far. I know it sounds really silly, but be like, honey, you're doing so good. And like, that carries with them and it stays with them. I know personally, there were like so many nights where I was like, screw this, I'm done. Go get the formula. I'm over it. And my husband's like, no, you're doing a good job. Like, keep going. And there were so many nights where I was like this close to being like, nope, we're over it. But if it wasn't for him, like, I wouldn't have kept going. So I think just being present. The other thing is like nourishing meals, making sure that she's staying hydrated, giving her a minute to like shower, do things for herself. Obviously my favorite is come to the prenatal, learn how to hand express. You can help her. The dads are like, yeah, I can touch the boobs. But like realistically, you will help her so much more if you know how to do that. Especially I always say, you know, plan for the unexpected. God forbid you end up having to have a C-section, right? He knows how to hand express. You can lay there, get your rest. Your body just went through a major surgery. Let him hand express for you. So I think just being present, positive affirmations, letting her know she's doing good. And then obviously you take care of her. She's taking care of the baby. Feed her. I always say get the grape leaves and the, you know, fan leaves or whatever. Palm leaves?
Palm leaves.
Feed her the grapes, tell her she's doing good. So being there, I think also too, another thing I talk about is like, if you have an intrusive family, set the boundaries with your family. The support person can be the bad guy. I always say, blame me. I don't care. I don't know your family. They're not going to be mad at me. But there's like this weird expectation where when you have a baby, you have to like entertain everybody and have everybody over. And it's crazy to me. You're breastfeeding your baby like 10 or more times in the first 2 weeks. It's like, how do you have time to like go cook someone a meal? So the support person, be the bad guy. We don't want visitors. Let her do her thing.
I think that is such an important part of just that mental reassurance that you've got this. You're doing a great job. Remembering to look at the clinical signs that things are going in the right direction. Perhaps disconnecting, like you said, from that comparison game on social media. As a mom of four with a different lactation journey with all four of my kids, it was so hard to get out of my own head and be like, am I doing it right? Is this enough? I feel like everyone falls victim to that. So that reassurance element in itself, especially from your partner, is so important because everyone, whether it's your first or your eighth, there is a time, especially in the middle of the night, because that's when our mind runs wild, right? Because we're awake and we're supposed to be asleep because that's our circadian rhythm, where you doubt everything. And everyone has gotten to that place. I'd like to talk to someone who hasn't, quite frankly, of, you know, being like, oh, I want to quit, or go get the formula, or let me get online and find, you know, a bag of donor milk, right? Because it's hard, whether it's physically taxing or, you know, the mental warfare, whatever it may be, or especially when like a baby has a feeding strike, you know, I feel like no one prepared me on that. Like I feel, and I'd love to hear your take on it, but like around day four to day seven, something happened with all of my kids that they just decided, nope, I don't want a nurse right now. Instead, I'm going to scream my head off for like half a day. And of course, every single time, like, it's me. I don't have enough milk. I don't care if I'm still nursing a toddler. I don't have enough milk. They need something else, right? So having that reassurance. And I always tell my clients too, have a breastfeeding mom that either is experienced in it or is in the trenches with you at the same time on speed dial, that you know will either pick up the phone in the middle of the night because she's also nursing, or that you can call the next day and talk you off that ledge, right? Because there's something about having that support. I think that's why these Facebook groups are also so popular, because you could search, you know, the bar and find, oh, okay, yeah, this is normal. This is not normal. And validation is important. It's a part of human nature. We seek to be validated in almost everything we do because we're always second guessing ourselves. And you've got a freshly postpartum hormonal mom who's sleep deprived. You know, she needs that love and support 110%.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it goes both ways, right? It can be damaging, but it also can help so much. I know just having friends have kids around the same time and getting through that, like, it's such a game changer to have that support. And so not having that or not having a partner that's like encouraging you to keep going, it's really hard. I need help with both my kids and even like being a nurse and lactation, all the things, like, you still don't know. I know for me personally, I was like preparing more for the birth, didn't think about anything after. I didn't do a breastfeeding class. I mean, it at the hospital, but it was whatever. But I wish I would have known so much. Like what I know now, if I would have known 4 and 6 years ago, it would have been such a different experience. But yeah, utilizing like those Facebook groups, the friends, the ones who are like going through it with you is a game changer.
Absolutely. So for those families that come to you prenatally, or just for any of the listeners who don't have access to come to you prenatally, what are your top tips for preparing for a successful breastfeeding relationship?
Well, number one, I always say have my phone saved in your contacts. Save my number. It's nice. And I think that's a part of like having, so even if you're not local, find a local lactation consultant or like a doula, someone who can be on your team that if you're questioning like, okay, is this right? Is this normal? You have that support. Meet with them before so it's not awkward. I always joke in here. I'm like, all right, now you're going to show me your boobs. But like realistically, like, yeah, it's kind of awkward. But since we've already done it, it's not weird when they come back. So find that support, have that person on your team, be prepared, learn the most that you can. Obviously, we don't want to info overload, but find someone who can personally be on your team. If they can't be like virtual, most lactation consultants like myself, we can do a virtual consult if you really need help. But doulas are like amazing. I think doulas are so underrated. People don't realize how much they can do and how much they can help you. So finding that support is super important.
Absolutely. So support, support, support. Now, in regards to the lactation market, right? Now, I know that this is, I know, the eye roll. I know, I get it. So the thing that I hear a lot, which means you hear it tenfold, the amount of times I hear it, is supplements. The foods, the supplements that are going to increase my supply. I know what I tell all of my clients, and I have a feeling it's probably similar to what you say, but can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. So I'm kind of like a less is best person, like the least interventions, the least things we have to buy. Like you don't need a lot, right? You need your bonding. You need that skin to skin. How we make milk is by removing it. So how do we increase our milk supply? We breastfeed more. We pump more. We really stimulate. We hand express more. So I'm, you know, go either way. I'm 50-50 with the supplements. I do feel like the goat's rue, the moringa, those are usually like my top two if you're going to do anything. But maintaining protein, high protein, staying hydrated, you should be able to maintain a normal milk supply. If not, that's where we go back to like, why are we not having a normal milk supply and kind of investigating. But as far as like the supplements go, I'm like less is best. I think they do help. Back in the day, they used to say like fenugreek was really good for your milk supply. And now the studies are showing that it actually does the opposite. So I try and say, stay away from that if you can. But yeah, I'm 50-50 on them. I think they're good. If they're working for you, great. I think it's like the same thing when, you know, everybody says like, drink water. But the only way you drink water is if like you put like an element or a, you know, salt or something in your water, right? That's going to encourage you to drink more. So I think if it's something that like makes you feel like you're getting more, then take it. It's not gonna hurt. If you're like really gung-ho on products, I like Legendary. They're fenugreek free. Cash Cow is like one of my favorite supplements to recommend if I am even recommending a supplement.
Yeah, I feel like I have this love-hate relationship with the postpartum market world. You know, there's so many supplies. There's so many new things that just strike on the vulnerability of moms, right? And again, going back to the whole cultural programming, that there's like this subconscious like whisper of, you're not doing it. You're not doing it right. It's not enough. Don't trust your body in the process, right? Time and place. Absolutely. I think that when those tools are enlisted with a proper plan of, you know, whether it be pumping, hand expression, power pumping, skin to skin, right? Really focusing on, okay, maybe we need to be more diligent on watching the clock. Maybe we're just not emptying the breast frequently enough, right? Whatever it is, adding those things in. But when I have a client telling me that, you know, we've got a baby now at 9% weight loss or 10% weight loss, and she's only really, you know, nursing every 4 to 5 hours, we have a really sleepy baby, poor output, but the baby's only suckling for 5 minutes and then falling asleep, and but she wants to know about lactation cookies. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now let's bring it back a step, right? Let's talk about what we're doing and how we can kind of dive and fix those things first before spending money on something that's probably in that situation not going to make a difference, right? So let's talk about pumps real quick, because I know a lot of folks will start their journey with a plan on, you know, just exclusively breastfeeding. And I love that goal. But having been a mom with my fourth kiddo while still nursing a toddler, we had a lot of breastfeeding issues, and I ended up exclusively pumping for him. And that was something I was not personally prepared for, because I had experience professionally supporting moms in that position. And I had pumped, you know, in the past when I was at a birth or, you know, here and there. But doing that exclusively was a whole different world. And some moms, too, they plan out on wanting to do that. That is what supports them, whether it be physically, emotionally, professionally, mentally better. So power to them. But in regards to pumps, we don't have to dive into the world of schedules and all of that. But just in regards to pumps, what is your top recommendation for pumps?
Yeah, and I just want to point something out before we jump into that answer. Pumping is still breastfeeding. So a lot of moms come in, they're like, oh, I'm exclusively pumping and I'm not like breastfeeding. Yes, you are. You're still providing breast milk. Don't let the internet tell you you're not. You're still doing amazing. It's actually more work to like exclusively pump. So kudos to you, Jesse. I don't know how you manage that with three other kids, but it's a lot. So it's breast milk. You're doing amazing. Don't compare yourself. Top pumps, probably like Spectra or Medela if you're starting out to really establish. I feel like talk about postpartum marketing. It's like crazy. There's so much out there. There's a wearable, the hands-free, the this, that. I think if you are pumping to like truly establish your supply, you want to start with like a hospital grade, a pump that's a little bit stronger. Now, this doesn't go for like the fourth time mom who has a really great supply and can pump on the go, right? Everybody's situation's a little bit different, but typically the wearable ones aren't as effective as the hospital grade. So like my top two picks are usually Spectra or Medela. I like Spectra over Medela because it's a little bit more gentle, but if you're someone who really needs a strong suck and you need that to really pull that milk out, then a Medela would be a better fit for you.
I agree 110%. I feel like with pumps, there's this thing where the wearables, because they're of a higher price point, that must mean that they're more effective, right? Everyone wants an expensive wearable pump. And it's like, rarely is that going to be the most effective. And one thing I didn't realize until my experience with Ozzy, with my fourth, was that you can rent hospital grade pumps from hospitals, even if you don't birth there. And I don't know why I never thought of that to be an option. But then I realized a lot of other people don't realize that either, that some hospitals will have breastfeeding clinics that have access to these certain resources or support if someone, for whatever reason, can't afford or doesn't have access to community-based providers, that you could go to these clinics, you can rent these pumps, even if you're not in network or, you know, birthed at that hospital. And I thought that was amazing to be able to do that. So we rented one of the hospital grade ones. And let me tell you, those are absolutely not the same. I'm a big Spectra fan, and that's the pump I tell my clients to go with when that's an option. But that Medela hospital grade pump, holy smokes, that is like next level for sure. So yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the mindset emotionally that plays into the breastfeeding experience and success rate. I know we kind of touched on it a little bit about being supportive and, you know, the middle of the night stuff, But in your experience, how have you seen that play in someone's confidence and long-term success rates?
I think it makes all the difference in the world, right? If you're going in with, I'm going to breastfeed, I'm going to do everything I can to make it work, it's going to work. If you're someone who's like, I don't really know if I want to, my friend told me all these, you know, XYZ stories, and you go in with that like kind of negative association, it totally plays a factor, right? Mind over matter. You know, there's the situations where like people just physically cannot, or there are issues going on. And I always look at their mental health. Like, honestly, that's the biggest thing. If you're not okay, you're not going to be able to take care of your baby. I would rather you give formula if that's going to make you a happier person and you move on and enjoy this postpartum period. But I really truly think like support is where it's at, right? I know for like me personally, I really wanted to breastfeed. Like that's all I wanted to do. And I had, like I said, not so great experience with my first LC, which thank God I did because that's how I got here. But with that being said, that like shift in your mindset can really mess with you. And if I didn't have my husband to be like, nope, you got this, keep going, it would have been a totally different experience. So I think, yeah, I mean, that plays a huge factor in setting yourself up for success. Like I know your prenatals are awesome. You educate them a lot. And I think having someone like you on their team makes such a big difference. It's a one-on-one. It's different than a class. It's different than an online learning. I know a lot of the pump companies like to be like, come look at our free class, right? And they use that as one of your insurance-based classes. The problem with that is like generalized. It's not specific to you. It's not how are we going to support you, Jesse, as a mom moving forward in your lactation or whatever your feeding journey will be. So I think, yeah, mindset is huge. Meditation, oh my gosh, helps with like letdown. It helps with like maintaining normal stress. Obviously, as a new mom, you're not sleeping. So that's huge. But yeah, mindset is where it's at.
Absolutely. And I like that little piece too that you touched on with that one-on-one support, whether it be with your partner, with your provider or your lactation specialist, is that customized plan on, okay, so this is where we are. This is where we want to be. How do we get there? And that I think is one of the coolest pieces that I've seen lactation consultants or counselors provide, is like, okay, these are our steps, right? Rather than just to generalize, oh, okay, let's do this to correct the latch and let me know how it goes. It's like, I need a plan, right? So many people want that plan. So I think that that being worked into that support element can help with that mindset of eliminating some of that stress and I'm doing this alone, right? And have that plan moving forward.
For sure. And that's like, you know, to touch on just an example, like I'll have moms come see me. They'll be like, oh, I think my supply's low. So I started pumping, right? So they're feeding their baby 8 times and now they're pumping 8 times on top of that. And they're wondering like why the baby's choking and doesn't stay latched. And it's like, you get this information that's just general, right? We're all doing the best we can at the end of the day. Like we're just trying to survive and make it to bedtime. But when they get that information, right, it's not specific to them. So someone who's like pumping and they don't need to, they're creating an oversupply, and that comes with a realm of issues. So I think just having that, like, I think that's why, honestly, prenatals are one of my favorite, especially like second and third time moms. I see second and third time moms all the time because they're like, this is what happened. I don't want that to happen again. And I'm like, okay, text me when you're in labor. We're going to book your first postpartum appointment. You're going to come see me. So I think having that alone makes such a big difference.
Absolutely. Just random. What's the craziest thing, like myth-wise, that you've heard? So for example, I still hear clients saying, oh, my mom told me I need to rough up my nipples. And I just like, people are still saying that? So what's the craziest one that you've heard?
I don't know. Crazy. Probably the hand expression. That's like the biggest one I get, that breastfeeding, like it's okay to hurt. That's, again, it shouldn't hurt. I think the hand expression is the biggest one.
Okay.
Honestly, they're like, my OB said I'm going to go into labor. And I've worked with like a couple hundred moms now at this point. Like, I can tell you, you're not going to go into labor unless your body's ready. But yeah, breastfeeding, you know, is okay to hurt, or pumping. Pumping is another one. Yeah, they used to say like scrub, like exfoliate your nipples to like toughen them up. Oh my gosh, I just like cringe when I hear that.
Yeah, this one said that her mom told her to buy, what's it called, iron wool. and use that on her nipples. I was like, please don't do that. That's horrible. Don't do that. Okay, so what's the most rewarding part of your career so far?
Oh my gosh, all of it. I think probably the moms, like, because I've been in their shoes. I struggled with breastfeeding both my kids. Even the second one, he was like way more challenging. I don't think it like ever was like, oh my gosh, it's great. But I wanted to do it because I knew it was good for him. But I think like when we're at the end of their journey and like even seeing them for weaning and they get emotional and they're like, I really like can't thank you enough. I think that's the best part of like reminding me why I do this is like I made an impact in their lives. Like I'm just a lactation consultant. I'm not like, you know, but I build this relationship with them. And I think it's so like, I get emotional talking about it. It's just so rewarding to see like I made that impact and like made them enjoy their postpartum journey.
Absolutely. And you're not just a lactation consultant. You know, a big part of my journey started with it was a lactation counselor that I had seen because we were having issues with my first and it was a really traumatic birth. And it was a lactation counselor that had was helping me with breastfeeding. But she had asked, what was your birth? Tell me your birth story. And did you have a doula? And I had never heard that word before, ever. And I looked at her sideways like, are you speaking English? And she was the first person to tell me what a doula was. And so that led me down the path of becoming a doula and then eventually becoming a midwife. So you're not just a lactation consultant. You are helping these women change the course of their motherhood and then in turn the course of their life. And then let's talk about that generational impact. So when that mom goes to have a baby, or I'm sorry, that child goes to have a baby or be the partner for, you know, their wife having a baby, and you have imprinted that experience and that will get passed down. That mom is going to be that grandma that's going to sit there supporting that new mom in that same place. And that starts, you know, with you and the support that you provide. So, I mean, it's such impactful, such important work. So in regards to someone potentially getting very inspired by you and is like, I want to do that. I want to be just like Ashley when I grow up, right? And they want to become a nurse or they want to become a perinatal specialist or even a lactation consultant. What is your advice to them?
Do it. Just do it. Don't think about it. I mean, it can be overwhelming. So like, even as a nurse, right? Like I had all my requirements done. I got into the program. It was a little bit easier because I had already done all of those prereq classes. It's very overwhelming though. Like the pathways, which one to choose. I think like sit down and really think pros and cons, like what works best for you and your family. But if you're considering it, especially if you're someone who's like been through it, like you personally know how hard it is, for example, breastfeeding or nursing, whatever, you know, like the challenge is real and having that support is a game changer. If you're thinking about it, do it. You will definitely impact someone's life. And thank you for saying all those nice things. You're right. I'm not just a lactation consultant, but it's such a life-changing career, I guess, if you will. So I always encourage, if you're even thinking about it, people DM me all the time. They're like, what should I do? Which pathway? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, I'll help you. Hold on a second. But it's like the fact that you're even thinking of doing that, like obviously you had something happen to you that you're passionate about helping other moms. And that's what helps our community. And I think if you're thinking about it, go for it.
Absolutely. So when someone's approaching the end of their breastfeeding journey and they're starting to contemplate the weaning process, are you also there to support that?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's when it comes full circle, because I feel like, especially with some of the families I work with, they work so hard to get there and then you blink and they're like one and they're like, okay, now we're going to wean. But I think that's what's, you know, the most rewarding is like seeing it come full circle. And now you've like met your goal. Now we're going to kind of give you your life back a little bit. Feels like that. So yeah, when they do weaning, it kind of depends on like what's going on, how many times a day they're feeding. Some moms will want to wean to just like one feeding a day. I always say weaning doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can do a combination of things. You can do one time a day. So it kind of just depends on what works for their family.
Absolutely. And for you personally, what was your favorite part of breastfeeding?
Man, probably I have like different things with each kid. My daughter was probably like the contact naps and just like falling asleep together nursing. My son, I think he was such a bruiser. He still is to this day. He's four now. But every time he would like want to breastfeed, he'd have like a snack with him. So he'd have like a strawberry. He would take a bite of the strawberry and then look at me, smile, and then like want to breastfeed. But it was like so funny. Like, how does that even happen? I have a picture of him. I don't know what he had. He had some snack. It was like on my breast as he's breastfeeding. And I was like, you know what? Whatever.
Right. I think
But
like when you're in it and you're in the thick of it, and especially when they're mobile and they're, you know, whether they can lift the shirt up and do it themselves or they're just like distracted doing the nipple lash, you know, all over the place, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so overwhelming. Maybe we're done. But then when you're on the other side of it, I had a dream last night, probably because I knew we were going to be talking today, but I had a dream last night that I was nursing. I mean, they were little. I was nursing my youngest and my toddler at the same time. And even though it was just a dream, I was so overwhelmed with that emotion of like, it's magic, you know, and that bond and that connection. And when you're on the other side, you do miss it. It's crazy. I nursed the ones that I did nurse, I nursed for so long. And I was definitely ready by the time it was, you know, I knew it was time for us to be done. But man, you do miss it, you know, and it's that time where it's just you and them and it's quiet. You get to also use it as a good excuse to like get away from social settings you don't want to be in.
Holidays,
Oh, we got to go nurse.
in-laws.
Right. But it's so awesome to be able to have that time, just you and them, you know, and it is such a short period of time. And I do reflect back on it, you know, usually pretty fondly and also accomplished because a lot of times it does start off a little rough and be like, oh my goodness, look where we've come. Look what we've achieved. I did it. It's such a good, even if it's only a month, you know, like it's, you did it. It's so hard, you know, and it doesn't always, it's not always hard. But for those that it is, let's be everyone, be proud of it, right? For sure.
Yeah, the bonding aspect for sure. I think was probably like my favorite with both of them. It's just something that like, you know, their dad can't do with them. Like that's our thing. And I think too, like knowing like I'm providing them life basically. Like such a cool, also stressful when you're struggling, but such a cool when we came out of it to be like, okay, we made it like over a year. Like I provided you that. Like not only did I make you in my stomach, now I'm feeding you. But that bonding, I think that's like, I don't know. I can't explain it. I feel like you have to go through it and like experience it. And it's like an unspoken, like magical, I don't know.
It is. And I think, you know, just like what happens with the brain chemistry when you're nursing and, you know, what we scientifically know to support that, like it's euphoric. It's so beautiful. I mean, I keep thinking of more questions to ask you because sometimes it's not, right? Sometimes women have a really negative experience while nursing and feel episodes of rage. And have you helped women navigate those situations?
Yeah, so Deemer, it's not pretty rare, but it's not like it happens to everybody. You know, you find ways to get through it. So like my biggest thing, I'm big on like meditation, deep breathing, like distraction, believe it or not. I know you talked a lot about like the nursing strike. Oh my gosh, just anticipating the thought of like going to breastfeed. My son was the worst. He was like a week, and I just remember being like, "Oh my God, I have to breastfeed." Oh my. And that like spiral of how am I going to get through it? Yeah, I mean, and I didn't have Deemer, but imagine the moms that do. It's really hard. It's really hard to get through. Deep breathing, like I said, meditation. A really good therapist I've heard has helped moms a lot too. But that can also be really tricky, right? And I get why some moms are like, you know what? This is not worth it. And that's back to that like mental health component. I used to work in mental health before, I joke, in my previous life. But my early years as a nurse, I was in like maternal mental health towards the end of it. But having that background like gave me such great education to like support these moms, right? So using those tools and like talking about it. I know it sounds like weird, like why do you want to share your problems? But I can guarantee you there's probably one mom that's gone through it and can be like, "Hey, this is what worked for me. Try XYZ." So yeah, there is, you know, that's out there. It's very challenging and it's hard to breastfeed.
So, with that mental health element to it. Obviously, postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, just that whole world of postpartum mood disorders is quite large and extremely common, right? Thankfully, a lot of the professionals I refer my clients to are very well versed on how to navigate those things, especially around breastfeeding. But for those listening that don't have providers that are well versed and educated on that, when medication is necessary to help a mom overcome what she's struggling in those that first year or plus, and she's going that path, can you talk a little bit on that? Because I know that some people will say, oh, no, this isn't safe for breastfeeding. You need to quit breastfeeding.
Yeah, so I'm really glad you brought that up. There are plenty of medications that you can breastfeed on. So if you are struggling, don't push it off. It's just going to make it worse. If your OB, midwife, therapist are recommending that, they're probably recommending that for a reason. Absolutely, you can breastfeed on a lot of antidepressants, even some anti-anxiety meds, right? Less than 10% passes through the breast milk, but you look at different levels. And so, you know, that would be something that you would want to have a lactation consultant on your team to be like, yes, you can breastfeed. Or if it's like one that we're really not sure about, recommendations for ones that are 100% safe for breastfeeding. So yes, you can breastfeed on an antidepressant.
Do you have resources? Is there any type of research that or a resource that a mom can go to see if a certain medication would be safe?
So Hales is a big one. I think you have to pay for it, but Hales would be where I would start. And then they break it down for you. Or like I said, a lactation consultant, but Hales. H-A-L-E-S.
And then what are your thoughts? How do you address the question that people ask? Okay, we're going to a wedding or it's our anniversary. We're going to have our first night out. So I need a pump and dump, right?
So with that, it depends, right? If you're having like 12 margaritas, yeah, you probably should pump and dump. The thing is people think if you pump and dump, it's pulling the alcohol out of your breast milk. That is not the case. Alcohol is passed around in your blood circulation system. So that alcohol is going to be there. I always say if like you really want to drink, drink when the baby drinks, wait 2 hours, breastfeed again. They used to say back in the day, if you can't find your baby, you shouldn't breastfeed. And it's not funny. but if you could drive a car, you probably could breastfeed your baby. But I usually say if it's like something where you know you're going out with your girlfriends, just pump in place of that feeding to protect your supply. So one, your supply doesn't tank, and two, you don't put yourself at risk for like a clogged duct, which can turn into mastitis. Same thing with the holidays, right? Everybody like wants to visit. You like start stretching out your feeding or pumping times. That puts you at risk. So yes, if you're going to go enjoy yourself, just pump and either like save it for a milk bath or save it for, I don't know, butt cream or something. You know, put it on your face. Give yourself a little exfoliation, but don't feed it to your baby.
Right. Another thing that I feel is such a gimmicky thing are those dang test strips.
pH strips.
So crazy.
They're going to always test positive.
Right.
If there's any like...
Yeah, so nuts. Awesome. Okay, so I also want to know, we've talked about so many different things today, tandem nursing. So I often have moms that get pregnant again while they're still nursing and they still have little ones, and they're always so concerned about breastfeeding while still being pregnant and then tandem nursing once the baby is born. So how do you approach these conversations prenatally?
So that's a great question. It depends on, again, where they're at in their postpartum journey with the first. A lot of times the concern is, okay, I'm not going to have enough milk for my newborn, or the milk's not going to be colostrum. What's really cool with the moms that I've worked with that do tandem nurse is the milk starts changing. So typically what happens, and not always, but typically what happens is the milk starts kind of converting back to colostrum. And so the toddlers are like, what is this? I don't want this. And they kind of wean themselves naturally, and that kind of just happens. But I've had moms where they keep going and they do see the progression back to colostrum, but they're like, what did my body just do? So it's really cool to see that. But I always say feed the baby first and then the toddler. So the priority should always be the newborn, because obviously the toddler has other sources of intake, other ways of food. But yeah, you totally can go all the way through. I think the like outliers obviously would be like the preemie, the preterm babies, if they have the history, and maybe you can touch on this a little bit, but if they are history of preterm or there is any sort of like contraction stuff that are happening, I would probably recommend to slow it down a little bit. But it's pretty rare that that happens.
Typically I see that there is a change with those nursing toddlers in pregnancy, with that composition starting to change, especially throughout the second trimester is when we really see these toddlers like, what is happening? And definitely wanting to either slow down or just go more for comfort nursing, in my experience, is what we see often. It's not a situation where I ever tell someone that they need to stop because of, being pregnant. But a lot of times I'll also have moms who feel just more sensitive being in pregnancy while nursing. And then they start just feeling itchy and crawling. Oh, I just can't do it. It's so uncomfortable for me. It's like, well, when it comes to the conversation of weaning, in my experience, we have to talk about it. Both parties need to be considered, right? So just because your toddler loves to nurse so much, but if you're feeling uncomfortable and you're having a physical response to nursing, we need to consider that. We need to start talking about other options as well. In regards to safety measures, my usual rule of thumb is if you're starting to feel any uterine tightening, cramping, anything along that lines at any point in the pregnancy, you need to let me know. I mean, when you're nursing, you need to let me know. And then that would be something we would evaluate what's going on. Rule out that there's no other outside liars to cause, any type of uterine activity. And a lot of times that would be a reason why we would discuss potentially weaning. But in general, no, same thing with harvesting colostrum.
Yep.
Not going to put you into labor. You are so amazing, Ashley. Are there any last things that you can think of that you wish more families knew from the start?
Probably the prenatal for sure. I'm big on prenatal because I feel like it really sets you up. I mean, like when I had a baby, I was so overwhelmed. And like I said, I was totally prepared for like labor and birth and, nothing with breastfeeding, nothing post. And I wish I would have known, or someone would have said, hey, guess what? Like the labor is such a small portion of your postpartum journey. So preparing for that. And then the other thing cool is like there are resources. You just have to find them. Usually, if you can find someone, I feel like our community, especially in Orange County, like we're so plugged in. We have resources for chiro, OT, PT. So I feel like finding like someone that you trust and then having those recommendations if you need them. Like I always say, pediatricians, like go meet your pediatrician before you have the baby. Make sure you even like them. What if you go and you're like, oh, screw that guy. I don't want to be with him. So kind of finding that team before like reduces the stress. The other thing, like lactation related, like I said, insurance covers visits. So like use them. If you're having a question or you're doubting yourself about something, one of my favorite times, moms are like, oh my gosh, my supply's low. They come in, we weigh the baby, they feed them, we weigh the baby again. The baby transfers like 4 ounces. I'm like, girl, you are good. So just using those resources in the community are so helpful.
Absolutely. Are there any favorite online resources that you have?
Depends on the week. one of my, like an old school one that I actually really like is Kelly Mom.
I love Kelly Mom.
KellyMom.com. Yeah, it's basic. I feel like it doesn't go too much in depth, but it also gives you like the information that you need. That's one of probably like my favorite feeding ones.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. So, for people that have fallen in love with you, as I have, what are the best ways for our listeners to get in touch with you and just kind of have you in their world?
I feel like I'm mostly only on Instagram, so at Ashley Shapiro Lactation. I have a website. You can always email me, text me, ashleyshapirolactation.com, but typically Instagram is
Cool.
where I'm at.
Awesome. And then for those that don't live locally and they can't come visit you in person, do you provide those telehealth visits even for those that live out of state?
Yes. Yeah, it's cool. Actually, a few months ago, I had a mom. I was working with her, and then she went back to Italy, and I got to do like virtual with her in Italy. And I was like, we are international. It was so cool. But yeah, I mean, I help. It's funny too, like siblings, like I'll work with a client and she'll be like, oh, my sister lives in Iowa. Can you? And I'm like, yeah, of course. So virtual is super helpful. Like I said, in person's always better if you could find a local. But if not, PPOs still cover that virtual visit. So if you ever are not in California or NorCal, whatever, you want to meet with me, I can help you via telehealth too.
Amazing. That's such a gift. Thank you again so much for your time, Ashley. You are just such a wealth of knowledge, and it's so good to see your face. I hope to see you in person for a hug soon. But thank you again so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me on this journey of growth, connection, and conscious living. If you found value in today's episode, share it with someone you love, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a moment. Follow me on Instagram at Gold Soul Midwifery and sign up for the newsletter to stay connected and in the loop. Until next time, stay grounded, keep growing, and remember, your gold soul shines brightest through the beautiful and messy moments of life.